More progress on the Lolo Creek Complex fire, but it's still not fully contained. Good evening, I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetich, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Flathead reporter Katrin Fry tells us how community health centers are helping people get health insurance. Capital reporter Dan Boyce has more on how individual privacy will be protected under the Affordable Care Act. And in our feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with residents of Upper Sleeman Gulch outside Lolo about some of the lessons they've learned after a week living with fire. Crews on western Montana's Lolo Creek Complex wildfire are making slow but steady progress, with line around 60% of that 10,902-acre incident. Information Officer Mike Cole says the fire's western, southern, and eastern flanks are now mostly in mop-up phase. Its northern side, however, is proving to be a formidable challenge.
Really steep, nasty country, heavy timber, places that you don't necessarily want to put crews down into. And we've been able to get a little bit more of that done just because we've missed some of those weather patterns that came over. And we've been lucky. We didn't have some of that thunderstorm activity that was predicted to come over. Even when it didn't move the fire around much, and that was a real advantage. I was just out there, and we've got two heavy helicopters that are just cycling one after the other, taking retardant up to the north end. And what they're doing is they have ground crews and equipment in there, and they're putting that retardant down so that the firefighters can get in there close to it and build line.
The Blue Mountain Fire Lookout and University of Montana Observatory, a telescope, are being wrapped with heat-resistant material as a precautionary measure. There will be a fire information meeting tonight at 8 p.m. at the Lolo Elementary School.
And another news from around the state, a former Billings senior high school teacher who pleaded guilty to raping a 14-year-old student who later committed suicide has been sentenced to 30 days in jail by a judge who said the victim was, quote, older than her chronological age, unquote, and, quote, as much as in control of the situation, unquote, as the teacher. The Billings Gazette reports District Judge G. Todd Boss sentenced 54-year-old Stacy Dean Rambold to 15 years in prison with all but 31 days suspended for sexual intercourse without consent. He gave Rambold credit for one day already served. The girl's mother repeatedly screamed, quote, you people suck, end quote, and stormed out of the courtroom yesterday. Rambold reached a deferred prosecution agreement after the girl's death, but prosecutors revived the case when they learned he had been terminated from a sex offender treatment program.
The state says workplace deaths in Montana decreased last year. The Montana Department of Labor and Industries Research and Analysis Bureau says there were 34 workplace fatalities in 2012. That is down by 15 from the previous year. The agency says transportation-related deaths were the most common. That was followed by being struck with equipment or objects, exposure to harmful substances or environments, and assault or other violence. Labor Commissioner Pam Busey says the trend is good news for Montana's workers and employers.
Community health centers are a healthcare option for those without insurance. Many of these centers are taking a lead role in signing people up for insurance through the state health exchanges starting in March. In Libby, the Northwest Community Health Center has expanded in the past few years, with plans to continue to grow to meet the ongoing demand. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on where these health centers fit into the Affordable Care Act.
Senator Max Baucus, an administrator of Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Marilyn Tavener, recently visited Libby and spoke with representatives from the Northwest Community Health Center about the needs and the numbers. The Libby Health Center grew from 1,400 square feet to 10,000 square feet in 2007, and it has plans to add several thousand more square feet next year. Executive Director Maria Clemens says they served just under 2,000 individual patients in 2003. By 2012, that number jumped to more than 6,000. Clemens says the health center provides comprehensive health care, including primary care, dental, and behavioral health.
Community health centers throughout the nation provide primary care to underserved communities. Our target is the uninsured and underinsured, but we do serve everybody.
Clemens says about 40% of the patients they see in Libby do not have insurance.
You know, we provide accessible, affordable care to them on a sliding fee scale so that we don't ever turn them away because of their inability to pay.
Clemens says in 2012, the Community Health Center of Libby served more than 6,000 patients. She says more than 70% of those live below 200% of the poverty level. That equates to a little more than $47,000 annual income for a family of four.
About 1,200 of our patients who are currently uninsured won't be eligible for any assistance through the Affordable Care Act because of the lack of Medicaid expansion. And so we would love it if all of our patients all of a sudden had insurance, but we know that that just frankly isn't going to happen. But any dent we can make obviously helps with a revenue stream.
Clemens says because the state chose not to expand Medicaid, it leaves a gap in those covered. She says they currently serve about 1,200 people living below 100% of poverty, which is about $23,500 a year for a family of four. Clemens says those people will not qualify for tax credits or subsidies to help purchase insurance because it was assumed that Medicaid expansion would cover people in that income bracket.
So when Medicaid became a choice for states, it left this loophole of really some really poor people who now have no option when the Affordable Care Act's intent was to provide options for everybody. So that's a struggle. It's a struggle for them. It's a struggle for organizations trying to provide them care.
Right now at the health center, if an office visit costs $100 and it's deemed a person is only able to pay $40, the other $60 is covered through a federal grant called 330 funding. Clemens says that may or may not change as provisions of the Affordable Care Act move forward because it'll be determined on a state-by-state basis. What they're working on right now is getting the information out there about the health insurance exchanges and signing people up for insurance.
Community health centers are fulfilling the need in the community. So the additional revenue we get through reimbursement of health insurance will go to provide additional services that our patients can't access now.
The Community Health Center in Libby recently received an $87,000 grant to hire two full-time employees to help sign people up for health insurance through the new health insurance exchanges. According to the Office of Senator Max Baucus, these are two of 27 being hired throughout the state as navigators through the Affordable Care Act. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Commissioner of Securities and Insurance Monica Lindeen is looking to assure Montanans their privacy will not be violated if they purchase health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. The navigators Katrin Fry just mentioned will be helping citizens sign up for plans. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us they will have to follow the same state privacy laws as insurance companies.
Commissioner Lindeen says Affordable Care Act navigators will have access to the private information of people signing up for insurance under the law.
Birthday, social security numbers, any type of financial information about how much you make, things like that, which are the types of information that are needed when you're filling out an application.
That has been raising concerns with some privacy advocates. Attorney General Tim Fox and 12 other state attorneys general sent a letter to U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. Fox's federal laws are lacking when it comes to protecting Montanans from unwarranted intrusion from these navigators. But Fox says state laws make up for it.
I believe that Montana is taking the right tack to try to make up for the inadequacies of the federal government's rules and regulations.
Lindeen says the Montana Insurance Information and Privacy Protection Act applies to navigators. Each navigator is required to receive special training on the specifics of the law. Fingerprints are collected, and they all must pass a background check. They may be able to discuss private information with clients, but they cannot share it.
If they do violate the law, they could be fined up to $25,000 for each violation of that law.
Three organizations have received federal grants to hire navigators: the Montana Primary Care Association, the Montana Health Network, and Planned Parenthood of Montana. Lindeen says these organizations deal with this type of private information as it is. Planned Parenthood of Montana Communications Director Lindsay Love says her organization understands the importance of privacy already as a healthcare provider.
Many of our patients come to us for reproductive health care instead of their primary care provider just because they know they can trust us with their health information and their private information.
It's not just navigators who will be providing assistance to people buying insurance to comply with the Affordable Care Act. Commissioner Lindeen says people known as certified application counselors will work in the area in a smaller capacity. Insurance agents are also allowed to take training to help people sign up. Lindeen says these assistants will also have to comply with Montana's privacy laws. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
5 homes have been lost in the Lolo Creek Complex fire, but hundreds more were saved when firefighters managed to stop the fire's progress along Highway 12 and eastward towards Sleeman Gulch. News Director Sally Mock spoke with Sleeman residents a week ago when they were on pre-evacuation notice. Later that evening, they got word the fire was headed their way and it was time to get out. On Saturday, the danger had passed and they returned to find their home still standing. Sally went back to Sleeman Gulch today, exactly 1 week from the fire's blow up, to have coffee with the residents of North Sleeman Gulch and hear their stories of this harrowing week. The voices you hear are Mark Johnson, Sally Cummins, Kirk Derby, Rob McDonough, Christine Wren, Karna Sunby, and Ken Olson.
I was here last Tuesday and talked to all of you then, and at that time you were a little nervous, but you weren't totally concerned about what was going on. And then a few hours later, Kirk, tell me what happened a few hours later last Tuesday.
It was pretty relaxed, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we had 45 minutes, and so we really started scrambling to get our things together and figure out what we needed to take, what was most important. And it got a little nerve-wracking at that point. It was like, wow, this could be real.
And you were surprised, weren't you? Even though you'd had some warning, it still came as a shock, right?
Yes, it actually did, yeah. Yeah, because you kind of going around I was a little bit lackadaisical in the sense that this isn't going to happen, you know, and then all of a sudden, when the reality comes that maybe it is, it's a whole different feeling.
And Rob, you too got the notice?
Yes. When my wife and I left that evening, you know, heading out of Lola, went to Missoula because we stayed in East Missoula that night. It was I was really concerned when I seen the ridge up on the Blue Mountain area totally on fire. You know, everybody could see it from town, and the impression I got was that the fire was it burned down into our area if you could see it that high. But it was just the ridge behind us. But the illusion was that it was like right there, and my wife and I just looked at each other and figured that more than likely we lost our homes. I think that was the consensus a lot of people had. And but fortunately, when we talked to the firemen the next day, you know, they informed us how it was the upper ridge, and that was the appearance that everybody got in town because it was right up top. And, you know, I've lived here for 20 years, and I've seen the fires up on the hillsides before, but this one particularly stood out in my mind. And to me, it looked like it was too close for comfort, but we relieved, you know, the next day to find out that the homes were intact. They also said that, you know, if the winds change or if we get some kind of bad weather, you know, not to let your guard down because things, spot fires can occur.
So not breathing a total sigh of relief yet and may not for a few days yet?
Well, yeah, not until we have, a significant weather event with heavy rain or too early to snow. But until things really change, because even with the containment lines, you know, if you get these high winds that come in, things can change. But right now, just glad to be home, and there is a sigh of relief knowing that, seeing the guard up here and all the firemen that have been, in and out, and I just can't thank them enough. And the firemen particularly were extremely professional, courteous, and what a great bunch of guys, all, law enforcement, National Guard. And like I said, we can't thank them enough. They were very professional. We appreciate all they've done for us.
You know sort of abstractly what firefighters do, and then you see it firsthand, and it's different, isn't it, when you really realize what they've done, Christy?
I think one of the things that's been the most amazing to watch is the teamwork. I mean, they could not have done this without incredible cooperation from so many different agencies and the communication that they gave us, the specifics of it, was incredibly helpful because I think it maintained a sense of composure. It kept people from relaying inaccurate information, and it reassured people that they were doing as much as possible, and we believed them. You know, we saw that happening on the ground and in the air. As Rob says, the professionalism was exemplary.
Karna, when you were leaving for the evacuation, do you look back at your house and wonder, am I going to see it again?
Yeah, just one of the last things I remember is thinking, oh, I need to water the flowers, and then realizing, oh my God, the flowers could be vaporized and the pots melted. You know, but I think what really brought it home to us was when we got the sheriff was at the door, and this is exactly what he said, is, I'm not going to sugarcoat this, folks. If nothing changes, the fire's going to come through the gulch tonight. And so that was the moment when I really realized we could lose our home tonight. So that was very frightening. And then we drove up Highway 12 on Sunday to just see if it looked like it was still burning. And what was amazing was you could see how the fire had burnt down to right literally backyards, you know, maybe 6 feet behind the house. And in some cases, it had burnt even into the side yard and the front yard. And yet all but, what, four or five homes were saved up there. And I think that just really, I mean, when I think of the firefighters doing that job, to me, they are amazing heroes.
You live at the very end of the road. Tell me about what happened to you on last Tuesday night.
When the warning came on Monday, I packed up my camper with my, you know, my meager valuables, my bottle cap collection and whatnot, and moved into town with my son. And then I came back out Tuesday morning, and we set up some sprinklers around the house and cleared away as much combustible stuff as we could. So we were testing out the programming on the sprinkler, and I had invited Rob and Karen up to have a beer because they hadn't seen my house yet. And so I was showing them around the house, and the phone rang, and it was Crystal down at the information thing. She had just come out of that meeting where they said it's time to go, and she says, Ken? I said, yeah. She says, it's time to go to town. And I looked out the window, and there's the sheriff and the fire department out in the front yard. And yeah, you got that right. So that's when we got moving. Pulse rates went up, and we got out of there.
What kind of a night did you have that night?
Oh, you know, I've only been in the house 2 months, so I was really kind of cussing out the previous owner because I know he knew this was coming.
After you cussed him out, it had to be a pretty nerve-wracking night.
Yeah, but, you know, as I've told anybody that would listen, you know, I've been around for a while. I've been over 60 and plus, and I've had bad things happen to me in my life, and it seems like every time something bad has happened, something better has come along to counteract that afterwards, and it's, you don't let events shape your reaction, you react to them. You know, it's, you can make it a tragedy or you can make it a blessing. It's all in how you, I don't know, digest it. So mm-hmm. So that's what I was doing. I was preparing myself for coming back and finding a basement and a pile of ashes. And so I was ready for that.
Mark and Sally, what do you think the blessing has been that Ken is talking about? And one of the blessings, it seems to me, is you all are sitting here and you seem very close right now.
I think we are very close, and the fire helped bring us even closer together. I think we all have to make this decision. What do we take out? I remember in 2000 when we evacuated, I think I took Grandma's recipe book and just about everything else I could get my hands on. This time we left with about, I don't know, three or four pieces of art. And we said to ourselves that the real memories are in our hearts and our heads. They're not physical anymore. And that's, I think, the lesson that we learned. And the other thing that I'd share with people, if a fire is anywhere near you, it can move much, much faster than you can believe.
And Sally, the landscape has changed a little bit on your road. A bulldozer came through and some hand crews came through and did a lot of clearing and so on along the road. Looks a little different.
It does look different, and that was one of the things I was thinking. One of the things we thought of, well, even if our house is spared, the whole hillside could be charred. How would we feel about that, looking out at black instead of this gorgeous green we have? And then when I realized the fire hadn't come, but knew that they were clearing, I thought, well, but that could be a real problem. In fact, it looks wonderful. Those firefighters, and when we would talk to them, they would say, oh, you have such a beautiful place here. They were just such nice young men. And they did a beautiful job. Our hill now is thinned very well for future years. And I suppose that, in a very practical sense, is a blessing. And then they told us they were going to come back in and clean up, chip all of the brush they left behind, which I find just amazing, and reclaim the bulldozer tracks. So, like everybody, I just can't thank them enough. They were so professional, so considerate, and it's that has really been wonderful. We did the most damage to our house because we finally did what we should have done 10 years ago and sawed down big juniper, huge juniper hedge in the front of our house. So we'll deal with that. That's fine.
And Kirk, there is a message here, isn't there, for everyone in Montana who lives in a fire zone and has their dream house in the woods. And that message is what, do you think?
Well, I think that message is to make sure that your house is cleared and that your property is cleared and that you have combustibles away from your house and that you're prepared to leave quickly with, you know, having the particular valuables bundled, if you will, or a list of what to grab and have a plan, really, to have a plan.
I'll ask all of you, and anyone can chime in on this, what do you think is going to be your strongest memory of this week? Because this is going to be a week you'll remember forever.
I think the way people all chimed in to help each other and relay information back and forth. I mean, we had acquaintances that we ran into in Lola when we had to evacuate that night that invited us to stay at their house if we had no place to stay. You know, really nice gestures like that. I mean, it goes to show you the community is pretty tight and they all care about each other. And, you know, people always asking, you know, what's going on, anything we can do to help. And it's like what Kirk was saying, how, you know, when they let us back to our house, you're running around trying to, you know, get some last-minute things and having a list, a simple thing like that, because you can't grab everything, and you always, when you leave, oh, I forgot this or I forgot that. Like what they were saying about the firemen being so helpful, it's simple things like when my wife and I planted some shrubs right by the road, some blue spruce, and we were out there moving some of the brush off them so, you know, they wouldn't, you know, die. The firemen actually came and helped us move some of the stuff off, which was incredible. I said, no, you don't have to do that. Oh, no, we don't mind. We'll give you a hand. And, you know, things like that I'll remember. I mean, because these guys went above and beyond and went just the nicest bunch of guys I'd ever want to meet.
So maybe a little less cynicism in Sleeman Gulch these days about the world, it sounds like.
I remember when we first came back and after the evacuation was lifted, and that happened sooner than we thought, and walking around the property at home, and I just felt extremely humbled, I think, and appreciative in the way that Mark has talked about that what sticks and is important is people and your relationships with them and your memories of what's in your heart. And so much of that, I think, is I think for us will be a legacy of the strength of our working together, helping each other out, making good plans ahead of time to try to expedite that in our community here. And I'm just very appreciative that I have a home and people around me who care deeply for each other.
Maybe not such a bad week after all. Although we don't want to repeat it.
I got to hug almost everybody in the Gulch now. So that's pretty good.
I'll get in line for that. Well, I just want to say how grateful I am to all of you for sharing your stories, because I think it's really important at this time that we all learn from what has happened. And you are the teachers right now. So thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As mentioned earlier, 5 residents along Highway 12 lost their homes in the Lolo Creek fire. For information on how you can help them recover, contact the American Red Cross.
And in tonight's weather forecast, for west of the Continental Divide, tonight expect partly cloudy skies with isolated showers and thunderstorms and areas of smoke. Lows will be in the mid-40s to lower 50s. Tomorrow calls for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms and areas of smoke. Highs will be in the mid-80s to lower 90s. For central Montana, tonight look for mostly clear skies with lows around 55 to 65 degrees. Tomorrow expect partly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs will stay in the upper 80s to lower 90s. And for southwest Montana, tonight calls for mostly cloudy skies, then becoming partly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Lows will be in the 50s. Tomorrow expect mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs will be around 75 to 85 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Sid McKenna.
Last week, the Missoulian Editorial Board proclaimed, "Stay on right road with workers' comp." As an attorney who represents injured workers, I could not disagree more. From my perspective, if you are injured on the job in Montana and relegated to the meat grinder of the workers' compensation system, you are often on the road to ruin. The Missoulian applauds the 2011 legislature for finally taking the right steps to reduce premiums for businesses in Montana. In truth, what occurred in 2011 has been happening every session the legislature has met since 1987, trying to lower premiums on the backs of injured workers. From 1987 to 2011, the consistent fix has been to cut wage loss and medical benefits to injured workers. But in 2011, the legislature went even further by stripping workers of the constitutional right that every Montana citizen has enjoyed, the right to choose one's treating physician. This coup de grace provides that at any time, the insurer may designate or approve a treating physician who agrees to assume the responsibility of the treating physician. So now, an insurer can send an injured worker to a company doctor who works almost exclusively on behalf of insurance companies. Preventing injured workers from choosing their own doctor may reduce medical services and claim dollars, but at the price of violating the sacred, constitutionally protected bond between patient and physician. How would you feel if your insurer told you that your doctor, who knows you, is competent to handle your treatment needs, and is within the insurer's network, was being replaced by the company doctor? The legislature had previously passed a similarly invasive law, one that allowed the insurer to literally sit in the examination room guised as a nurse case manager. This law allowed the insurance company to talk privately with the worker's physician without the knowledge of the worker or his attorney. Recently, the Workers' Compensation Court struck down that law, deeming it an unconstitutional violation of a Montana's right to privacy. A link to that case will be posted with this commentary on KUFM's website, where you can read about the insurer's behind-the-scenes antics in that case. I wish the editorial board of the Missoulian had read the case before proclaiming our state is on the right road. After years of legislative cuts, the wage loss benefit is so minimal that I tell most of my clients to prepare for financial shock and hardship. I currently represent a lifelong laborer who had, until recently, never filed a workers' compensation claim, although he worked for about 25 years performing hard, heavy labor. He was earning nearly $60,000 a year, which equates to about $1,100 per week. His doctor will not release him to work until he recovers from his injuries. He therefore receives weekly benefits in the amount of $596 per week, or about half of what he earned while on the job. For him and other workers, it is distressing to try to feed a family and keep a roof over their heads while recovering from a devastating injury that happened at work. I could go on and on with examples of the system's pitfall for workers, but what are the Missoulians concerned for high premiums? Insurance premiums can be effectively reduced without eliminating workers' medical and constitutional rights. Montana is one of the more dangerous states in which to work, and workplace injury and deaths in Montana occur far too often. While the editorial acknowledged that job site safety is an issue that needs to be addressed, the legislature has essentially scoffed at this issue in the past. Montana laws provide little disincentive to an employer who operates an unsafe work environment. Even when a worker is injured by actual malice of the employer, the legislature has shielded such employers from legitimate legal claims, regardless of the severity of the injury to the employee. By focusing on improving workplace safety to reduce injuries and benefits paid, our lawmakers could effectively serve both the Montana workers and employers they were elected to serve. It is unfortunate that the Missoulian has taken the corporate insurance industry line regarding workers' compensation, that whatever we do in this state to reduce premiums is okay, even stomping on individual constitutional rights and denying injured workers reasonable wage loss benefits. Legislators and editorial boards need to look into the eyes of the injured Montana workers I represent, hear their stories, and share in the anguish of a proud breadwinner struggling to provide for his or her family's basic needs with the receipt of workers' compensation benefits. This is Sid McKenna with the Montana Trial Lawyers.
Sid McKenna is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson. Thanks for listening. And please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.